The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Dubai, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line this Friday lunchtime on the Isle of Man. We're open line through till one today. Yesterday was Douglas South MHKs, Claire Christian and Sarah Maltby. And if you want to follow up on anything they talked about, we were running the news story this morning. Sarah Maltby and quite a few other people lament the loss of the regional police stations around the Isle of Man. There was one in Paul Rose, of course. There were plenty here, there and everywhere. At the bottom of all that was, of course, cost of putting police stations across the Isle of Man. Now, police respond on cars and what have you around the Isle of Man. So bringing back police stations into areas would involve more money, and it just depends really what you want to do. But if you've got any thoughts on that, then text, email, call and WhatsApp. There was the particular position of the football changing rooms in Paul Rose. And again, an iconic location those football pitches have provided recreation and fun for many, many generations of people. And not just sports people. Lots of people go to watch there. And of course, it's a nice green open space as you're heading out of or into Douglas. So any thoughts on that and anything else that the MHK case had to say yesterday? Just one more constituency MHK session, and that is with Tim Crookall and Kate Lord Brennan of Glenfaber and Peel, and we'll sort that out fairly shortly, and I'll tell you all about it when it's happening. But anything else you want to talk about? Yes, that story on the news today that one of the iconic fixtures in Castle Street, the T-junction, is going to go. They're not renewing the lease when they go next year. It's safe to say that they've really made an name for themselves and kept standards very high, but no more. It's going to go. Lots of people will think that's a shame, but it does provide an opportunity for somebody else to nip into the venue and do something with it. But any thoughts on that? And again, this issue of hospitality being under the cosh has been mentioned many times before, and whether or not the government can do, will do, or want to do anything with the VAT rate for hospitality. Calls are being made for VAT to be overhauled as part of efforts to assist businesses facing increased pressure. Well, let's face it, we're coming into the time when people will be making plenty of money. Because 6 weeks today will be pre-TT at Billown. It's going to be practice day, Friday, 24th of May. That, of course, is just that weekend is the May Bank holiday weekend, Spring Bank holiday, which means it's the start of TT as well. So in 6 weeks' time, everybody will be making plenty of money. What they do for the rest of the year, of course, is fairly and squarely down to their efforts in getting customers in. But if you're in hospitality, and this is chiming with you, and if you've got something you'd like to add to the debate, by all means get in touch by text, email, call and WhatsApp. And lots of a comment yesterday that we didn't get to with the MHKs. I'll get to that. Lots of comment regarding properties, dilapidated properties, and also parking, unsocial parking around there. And I just want to say, before we go any further, nobody's picking on van drivers. Okay, individually, there's nothing against. The fact is that the van drivers have been shoehorned into a situation whereby they are taking perhaps a works van home because there's no facility for it to be parked at work. And they're parking on streets that weren't designed to have big vans on them. Streets that were designed 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, when cars were a lot smaller and not as many people had big works vans. But that situation is becoming more and more prevalent. Big works vans are being parked on residential streets that simply weren't designed for them. Now, it's not the van driver's fault. certainly not the people who live on the street's fault. So what do you think we should do about it? And let's get to the lines. We've got, this is Thomas is with us, first of all. Hi, Tom.
I didn't know I was live, so
you're live on the air, speaking to the Isle of Man.
I'd rather speak privately, first of all, if that's possible.
Well, I'm sorry, we're live on the air. You should have made that clear before, but thanks for calling anyway. Julian's on. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Right, a couple of things. First one, just the first one's quick. The Prescription Medicines Code of Practice Authority in London has found that Pfizer has breached five codes of conduct related to their mRNA COVID vaccines, particularly in regard to a Twitter messaging that they did in the clinical trials where they only showed the relative risk reduction figures rather than the absolute risk. So this gave the impression of 97% efficacy, whereas actually the figure was less than 1%. Also, there was no adverse events reported, despite the fact that it's come clear now that they knew about over 1,200 adverse side effects.
And this is when was this reported, Julian?
This is in the last week. This is they're known as the PMCPA, or the Prescription Medicines Code of Practice Authority. The five codes of conduct that have been breached is bringing discredit upon and reducing confidence in the pharmaceutical industry, promoting an unlicensed medicine, making a misleading claim, making claims that did not reflect the available evidence regarding possible adverse reactions, and finally, failing to maintain high standards.
And is this a slap on the wrist, or any sanctions for it?
Well, this is what's being decided at the moment, but this was the interim. If it's on their website, I think it's PMCPA.com, I think.
And what's the organisation again?
It's the Prescription Medicines Code of Practice Authority,
right?
Or PMCPA. So that's the first one. By the way, welcome back, by the way. Nice to hear your voice.
And you too as well. Thanks, Julian.
A couple of news articles that took my attention, which might get people perhaps a pause for thought, to do with the assisted dying bill. First one is from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which is the Canadian version of our BBC. The title to look for is Calgary Judge Rules 27-year-old Can Go Ahead with MAID Death, which is their Medical Assistance in Dying acronym, despite father's concerns. And this story relates to Justice Colin Feasby's ruling that a 27-year-old autistic daughter should have the right to be euthanized under assisted suicide against her father's wishes. This is despite the amendment to the Canadian MAID legislation, which is, I've mentioned it before a few times, Bill C-7, which will include the mentally ill with no other comorbidities. But that's been delayed until March 2027 at the moment, so I'm not quite sure how that's going through. But despite the ruling, the judge has given the father a further 30 days to appeal to the Alberta court. So the outcome will be known in 2 weeks' time, so one to keep an eye on. And the other story, closer to home in the Netherlands, this is reported in the Dutch Review, and the title for this one is This 28-year-old Dutch woman with mental illness will be euthanized in May. And this news article relates to Zoraya Ter Beek, who lives in a nice house. She's got money, two cats, and a loving boyfriend. However, she has autism. And after being told, amazingly, by her psychologist that she will never get better, she's decided to go for euthanasia. So next month, a doctor will arrive at her home to carry out the procedure. She doesn't have much family, so she's not having a funeral, but she wants her ashes scattered. Interestingly, in 2022, there were 8,720 assisted suicide deaths in the Netherlands, of which 115 were only for mental illness.
8,000?
8,720, which is 5% of all deaths in the Netherlands. And it's going up at an ever-increasing exponential amount. So it seems to be almost becoming the default method of...
Good grief.
Yeah, but 115 of those had no other things apart from mental illness.
Well, obviously, any time we speak to Dr. Allinson or people who are for the proposed legislation here, they say that our legislation is going to be virtually bomb-proof and there won't be any allowance for secondary legislation subsequently.
Mm. But this is why Theo Boer, who was the chap that was first on this in the Netherlands, he was the ethicist who was overseeing it all. And I think I read the letter out to you a few weeks ago. He's now completely reversed his ideas because it seems that politics has got in the way. People have been saying, well, you're discriminating against me because why should it only be for the terminally ill? They've caved on it. And now you've got Canada doing it. You've got Oregon doing it. You've got the Netherlands doing it. You've got Australia about to change as well. So,
and I think your contention is that if we do get such legislation, that anybody who invokes equality legislation may well win out, if you like.
That's right. This is the issue. This is the slippery slope, you know, right under your nose. I mean, there aren't that many jurisdictions that are doing assisted dying as yet, but a vast majority of them are all going down the route of switching it to just about anybody. So, you know, how at what point do you be, if you're deemed to be mentally ill, at what point could you actually be put through this?
Well, I'm not sure it's just anybody, but as you say, somebody's got to have the will and the wish and the kind of power, the intellectual capacity to want to do this. And again, it just depends whether or not, as Dr. Allinson says, our legislation simply cannot be affected by secondary legislation subsequent to that. You obviously doubt that.
Well, you see, I've got this kind of feeling, you know, when it comes to when it comes to the government doing stuff, we've had the sea terminal in the ferry terminal at Liverpool having problems. We've had the promenade. Yet there's all these things, and this is the most difficult thing to legislate. So, even if you're pro it, do we believe that any government in the world is capable of actually doing this right and not people getting coerced into this or tricked, or, you know, this is way more difficult than putting a sea terminal in. So, you know, you've got to ask the question, even if you are for this, do you believe that it's going to be ironclad for the rest of time?
OK. All right. Good to hear from you, Julian. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Andy. You too. Cheers.
All right. It's 20 past 12. Betty's on now. Hello, Betty.
Oh, hi, Andrew. I just want to talk about the Northern Tip.
Oh, a balladool. What's happening?
Well, apparently they're considering closing because Bride no longer wants to contribute to the cost of running it.
Well, Bride, I think, said they were putting £65,000 in.
Yes, I can understand Bride being not happy because apparently they're contributing £250, and the rest of the community who want the tip are only committing £250.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem fair at all. But I do think that the people running the tip and Bride ought to come to some sort of agreement, because otherwise we're probably going to get lots of fly tipping going on.
I mean, do you think this is just Bride commissioners with a shot across the bow, just saying, you know, we've got to sort this? Basically, they want to pay less money, don't they?
Yes, I can understand that. If they're paying much more than the other communities who are part of it. I mean, I don't live in Bride, so I haven't got an axe to grind about it. But probably if they're paying so much more, something needs to be done, because they probably needs to be fairer. I don't know.
Yeah, well, fly tipping affects everybody, and we don't want to see that.
No, and that will encourage rats and all sorts of things.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Betty.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, this is a story about Bride commissioners. They're stopping paying contributions to Balladool. Bride commissioners urge residents to treat the parish with care. They've stopped paying into the Northern Civic Community site. If you normally use Balladool, you need to contact the commissioners for more information on 819235. Bride commissioners say they were paying £65,000 in contribution, which they say they just can't afford to do anymore. The Northern Civic Community site's operated by Ramsay, and the cost of each local authority is based on the rateable value of the area. Bride said that due to the £250 per household charge compared to £50 in other parishes, Bride have fought for over 5 years to get a better system, and now that's it. They're stopping. So we'll see what happens. I got a an unkind message in from Sandra, who said, I thought everybody who lived in Bride was a millionaire. Surely they can afford it. Well, it's down to the commissioners, and that's their opinion. Just a quick word, if you're driving and heading for the mountain, the matrix signs at Bagarrow, Hilbury, Ramsey and Sulby to the mountain are showing fog on the mountain road. So where the sunny intervals are, heaven knows. Brian's on now. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Mooker. How are you going?
Good, thanks.
First of all, let me applaud Bride commissioners for at least looking at the costs. If a lot more government departments, local and national, were looking at what we have to pay because they deem it so, then I would be a lot happier, because I'd feel better that they are trying to do something rather than just sitting there and saying, this is what it costs, so you'll have to pay. Also, I'd just like to applaud Julian, because he's very, very accurate in what he has to say about the assisted dying, but not just assisted dying, everything. We are a small jurisdiction, and we shouldn't be the first that has to leap in and sort out all the loopholes, legal loopholes and problems. Leave it for the big boys, and we'll copy whatever they do once we see that it's been sorted out. They'll all be happy for us to argue in the courts over, I don't know, radio, telephone masts and all the rest of it, because they're being disputed the planet over. And if we go into court over things like that or the assisted dying bill and end up paying hundreds of millions of pounds for the lawyers at the end of it all, somewhere else will say, right, it's all sorted out now, we have a legal precedent, we can go ahead and do that. But that isn't why I came on. Nice one, Julian. What I came on about is, yesterday they were talking about parking of vehicles, and you mentioned it this morning. And you know, Andy, because I've taken you round, you've seen where I've offered. Now, the parking of vehicles falls into two distinct categories. A person who has a van and uses it for their transport and their work needs to have that necessarily somewhere close to home. Somebody that has a horse box, a boat, a caravan, a trailer, or anything that they use on the weekends doesn't necessarily have to be close to their property. So the first step is to try and address some part of the issue. And as you know, Onken have deemed not to do that. In fact, I listened to the biggest load of tripe at a meeting the other week. They're missing the whole point. Not everybody has to use their van every day, but some people do. And if you've got 10 cars and 4 of them aren't working, you should have somewhere away from your house where you can have them securely parked. So let's start trying to address the issues instead of bleating on about them and trying to get some political mileage. Now, I offered a site. Now, you've seen it. Tell me, would it offend anybody? Was it visual to anybody?
It's certainly not in the eye line of anywhere.
No. And it's pretty unique in that it's reasonably close to the centre of population. Now, apart from yourself and the two MHKs and the clerk to the commissioners, none of the others bothered to do anything about it. And on one final note, the Onken Commission has had their budget, and streetlights came into the fray, and they didn't budget for the replacing of streetlights round the park. The lead member for all of these things is Mr. David Quirk, who's telling everybody every day on the radio what they should be doing. So, David, I went to have a look at these streetlights that you omitted to mention in the budget. And not only are they rotten, one of them's got a hole right through the base of it, such that in the last year, they've sawn it off at just over a meter above the ground and isolated it, as they have with a couple of them around that area. So, did you not notice that?
Whereabouts is that?
That's right round the top of the park, opposite the stadium. I was amazed. They've actually, because the streetlight had rotted through, I'll try and send you a picture of it, you could put your fist inside the lighting column at ground level. It's that rotten. And they've sawn it off and left it with a polythene bag over the top of it. And it's been like that, oh, better part of a year by the looks of it. You know, David is very quick to tell everybody else what they should be doing. I would encourage him to start trying to sort out the issues in Onken, start trying to get on with the other people at the meeting and stop arguing amongst yourselves and get some of the hedges cut and the pavements fixed and the streetlights in the flipping budget where they should have been and not coming to borrow vast sums of money after the event.
I want to go back to this parking thing. What is preventing people like yourself, anybody who's got land that they can set aside for van parking, lorry parking, leisure vehicle parking? What's stopping you or anybody asking people to park there right now?
Okay. I approached Onken Commissioners. It was an idea that I had because I'd had this area. I heard about lots of people having problems in the district, and I thought, I could do something with that. There's a secure area. It's not going to offend anybody at all. So I mentioned it to Derek Crellin, the commissioner. And he took the idea to the commissioners. We hadn't told a soul, right? Nobody had been consulted. And I said to him, see if the commissioners would support a planning application for me doing something or offering something up there. This he did. And the following day, one of the commissioners legged it down to the planning and reported me for failing to get planning permission for the parking of vehicles. I hadn't even done it. They were premature. But, you know, some people are just like that, aren't they? And I won't mention David again, but unless he starts acting like an adult instead of a petulant child, unless he stops trying to get himself back into the Keys for the easy money, he's on about everything that the Keys aren't doing that he can think of. Well, why don't you come on and tell us what you actually achieved, David, at any time in your political career?
Okay. So just, I want to nail this parking thing down then.
Yeah,
so you would have to apply for what, change of use, or what would it be?
It would be basically change of use. And you see, what I was proposing to do there, Andy, is it's in a remote location close to Onken, as you know. I was going to put CCTV up so you could park, because some of these vehicles are extremely expensive. Even horse boxes, £25,000 for a horse box is about normal. And you need somewhere that's secure and accessible for yourself. I would do that. I'd put that up and offer the parking. And that would be a starting point, I thought, Now, I'm not so keen now. If everybody's going to put hurdles in your way, forget it. Mm. Find somewhere else yourselves, because it's going to be an ongoing issue forever and ever.
It's going to get worse, because if they're going to have more people, there'll be more cars, and they're going to be the same streets with more cars on them.
Well, you know, there's another issue. With this policy of increasing the population of the island flies completely in the face of controlling carbon emissions. If you haven't noticed, any person that lives on the Isle of Man is consuming quite a lot of food and other produce and furnishings that have to be transported over the Irish Sea, to which there is a carbon consequence.
Yep.
Now, if you increase the population of the Isle of Man, then you are going to increase the unnecessary carbon consumption. So please, just because you've overspent and you can't control your purse, the only way out of their situation is to get more people paying into the health service, otherwise it will fall over. But that's not curing the problem, that's just kicking the can down the road, because all the people that you bring here are going to be here when they get older and they'll need more care. But of course, it won't be their problem then. This isn't the way out of our situation. The way out of our situation is a complete rethink about how we put politicians in place, and at least put people in place that have some knowledge and some experience about how to control costs, because everything is just going ridiculous. And I challenge you again, because after the last time I did the doom and gloom speech, you came on and said everything in the island isn't quite that bad. Well, if it isn't quite that bad, tell me any government department that's functioning well. Try and phone the police, 631212. Challenge everybody to do that now. You'll go round the houses and you'll be told, if it's an emergency, phone 999. Otherwise, go online. You can't get through to departments. Everybody's working from home. I've got people with horses on my yard. It's surprising how often you see them working when they're at the farm. We're going down, and unless we get proper politicians in place that will concentrate on the role that they've got, look at all the implications, and challenge the civil servants that are just running amok at the moment. We've got heads of department on over £100,000 a year, and their departments are losing money. Where in the private sector would you ever get a situation like that?
Well, what's happened, I think, over the past 20-odd years is, do you remember there used to be a kind of unwritten formula that if you worked in the public sector, it was very rare that you could get fired. The pay yes. wasn't as good as the private sector,
yes.
and you got a pension at the end of it.
Yep.
On the other hand, in the private sector, you got more money, but you had to deliver, and you had the threat of the sack.
That's
now,
right.
It seems that private sector levels of pay have been conflated into the public sector.
Well, it all started about 1984, when we started paying our politicians. It was said that politicians were elitist because they went in to feather their own nest. Well, that was partially true. But at least the people we had showed some initiative. As soon as we started paying politicians, it became a popularity contest. So individuals who like to charge around Springfield Court and the Old Friends Society and give people lifts backwards and forwards to get we call it granny farming. The elderly people, oh, he's a lovely fella, I'll vote for him. Look, I don't want a lovely fella representing me. If I wanted a dog to look after my money, I'd pick a sod of a thing. I wouldn't want a nice smiley one with no blimmin' brains. And we've got a lot of politicians that are totally populist, and they can't see beyond the next election, and they're scratching, trying to find something they can attach their name to so it puts them in the press for the opening of the bin, as they used to say. They're okay. There smiling and waving. And look at yourself. Let's look at Andy. If you didn't have any listeners, how long would you be working for Manx Radio?
Not a fat lot of time.
No, you'd be out the door pretty damn quick. And that should be what's happening in government. How can you let something not go over price, not double in price, but quadruple in price? That can't happen in the private sector. The company would be bankrupt long before that happened.
OK. All right, Brian, we appreciate that. Thanks for calling today. Have a good weekend.
Thanks very much, and I apologise for everybody for boring you to death. Sorry.
All right, it's 22 minutes before one. Thanks also to, is it Texter 612, I think, who sent me a note in, and this is regarding a press article that came out a few years ago, and it was an interview with a certain Manx politician. And this politician was described as one of the remarkable architects of the Isle of Man's economy. He was chairman of the EXCO, that was the Executive Council, pre-ministerial system. In effect, the Isle of Man Prime Minister, this UK article said. And it was talking about how the Isle of Man's economy ran. And the question at the end of the article from this Manx politician, I'll tell you who it is in a moment, why does the Isle of Man's economy work so well? This politician said, it's because we interfere as little as possible in people's lives. We don't need vast legions of non-productive civil servants, and we treat the economy of the Isle of Man as a business, not something to be tinkered with and messed about for political reasons. The late Clifford Irving, MHK, they were talking about. Well, I get it, says this texter. Julian's against his sister dying, but if he doesn't want to take advantage of that, then fine. But I do. So why can't I decide what to do with my own body? It's nobody else's business. Bob said, Andy, I've got prostate cancer, so I have a lower immune system. I'm going to be getting my spring COVID booster for sure. And speaking of big pharma failing, says this correspondent, any thoughts on violations to the UN charts and our human rights being broken by unlawful bills? Sad that opponents of assisted dying will push and push to try to deny the help that people need to end suffering, says Jim, a guy who watched his brother die painfully over many months. This assisted dying proposed legislation really does divide opinion on the Isle of Man. And I'd like your opinion, certainly. Julian was talking about Holland and what's happening there. And Sue says, my relative in Holland has approached his GP about possible AD, assisted dying, as he has Parkinson's. He's registered his interest with absolutely no pressure. So I suspect some of the stories are out of context, a bit wild. Also, if AD, assisted dying with counselling, is not available, then some will be driven to take their own lives. A complete ban will protect nobody. So the whole point of the assisted dying legislation is so that people who have a terminal illness and who have been resident for a certain amount of time on the Isle of Man could possibly, in the future, if it happens, take advantage of assisted dying, legalise assisted dying on the Isle of Man. As I say, this divides. It's I've said it before, say it again. I don't like talking about this. I don't like talking about the taking of lives and people's lives ending. However, this is something that's in our face. You can't get away from it. This is a proposed private members bill from Dr. Allinson himself, a GP of long standing. And of course, Dr. Allinson has seen life. He's seen death. He's seen birth. He's seen blood. He's seen guts. He's seen everything. So we take Dr. Allinson's opinion with a fair amount of weight. He's a professional man. But it will affect the Isle of Man. It will affect our image across the world, around the UK, across Europe. We will become a legislation, an administration that has this legislation in place if it happens, which at the moment Well, it's heading towards it. It may not happen, but it may.
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
Athol Garage in Ballasalla doesn't just service and repair any make or model of car. They also operate a recovery vehicle to rescue you and your vehicle from anywhere on the island.
See? Aren't you glad we went to Athol?
For top quality work from Nissan factory trained technicians, dedicated aftercare, and now recovery too. Athol, a garage to swear by, not swear at. Book now at athol.im or call the A-team whenever you need them. 820082.
I began to struggle with the stairs, but I didn't want to leave our family home. So my daughter told me about Acorn Stairlifts and their new showroom in Douglas. I was able to try the stairlifts and find the right one for me and the home I love. They were so friendly. The whole process was hassle-free and they offered the whole package from installation to servicing. Choose the island's first choice for stairlifts. Acorn Stairlifts, South Douglas.
Call Acorn Stairlifts now on 672 414 or call into our Douglas showroom.
We are ready to go at B&B Furniture with a wide range of manager specials throughout the store. If it says I'm ready to go, then it is ready to go. Priced in-store for immediate delivery and no long wait for stock to arrive onto the island. Get the furniture you're longing for with no wait, no deposit required and 0% finance available when you get ready to go at B&B Furniture. It's all here under one roof at the B&B Furniture three-story showroom in Snugborough.
B&B Furniture.
From Peel to Paris, Manx Telecom has you covered at home and away with new inclusive roaming plans. Enjoy unlimited speeds and up to 400% more data when you roam any of the 37 included countries. Prices from just £24 per month, exclusively at Manx Telecom. Don't miss out. Sign up in store or call 624-624 to upgrade today. See mt.im/gobig for details, terms and conditions.
Manx Care's ambition is to become the best small island health and social care system in the world, and Manx Care's chief executive certainly has the passion and commitment to try to deliver that very worthy aspiration. So why have we not seen that ambition being delivered so far? What obstacles lie in the way of Manx Care delivering health and social services to help us all live long and healthy lives? Find out when Theresa Cope joins me, Phil Gorn, on Perspective this Sunday at 12 noon on Manx Radio. If strategies and plans cured illnesses, we'd all be a lot healthier. So when will we start to see the real change and improvement that significant budget increases appear to promise?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast to match, 12:45 after Man in Line today. It is Friday, so remember every Monday and Friday in our 60th anniversary year, you'll hear us going back into the archive. And today, well, talk about heavyweight. We'll hear part of an archive interview broadcast in 1995 ahead of his 50th Tymwell Day ceremony. Who had his 50th Tymwell Day ceremony in 1995? Sir Charles Carouche. So Sir Charles Carouche will be on Man in Line on Manx Radio just after we finish today, back in 1995. If you want to talk to politicians, now there are many and varied ways. This weekend, there are a couple of surgeries taking place. Arbury Castle Town and Maloo MHK's Jason Morehouse and Tim Glover will be at Colby Methodist Church Hall in Station Road from 10 to 11:30 tomorrow. Just it's a drop-in format, just simply pitch up. And also from 10 to 11:30 in Onchan at the Hub, the Onchan Youth and Community Centre in School Road, Rob Callister will be there if you want to go and meet Rob Callister. But also a week on Monday, the start of a week's worth of, you may have heard of these, listening to you forums that the Chief Minister's putting together. Now, the Chief Minister wants to meet you. They're turning up with a panel of the people from the Council of Ministers. The ministers are going to be there, and they're in Castletown, Peel, Douglas and Ramsey. Week on Monday, Castle Russian High School in Castletown. A week on Tuesday, the 23rd, QE2 High School in Peel. A week on Wednesday, Ballacameen High School in Douglas. And a week on Thursday, the 25th, at Ramsey Grammar School. So there will be a question and answer a session, a panel session. There's free tea and coffee there as well, so that's worth a trip anyway. And they're on from 5:30. I think the doors open at 5:30 and they start at 6. So they run till 8 o'clock every night. Monday the 22nd, Castle Russian High School in Castletown. Tuesday the 23rd, QE2 in Peel. Wednesday the 24th, Ballacameen in Douglas. And Thursday the 25th, Ramsey Grammar School. If you want to meet and greet, so the Chief Minister will be there. If you want more, we're not suggesting they're going to be sold out, but if you want to go, I think if you go to manxradio.com, click on the news page, there will be a click through, I think, that some of the, you can kind of reserve your place with Eventbrite, but simply, I would imagine there'll be plenty of room anyway, and they'll make room for you. But that's the week after next, listening to the public, four special sessions when you can meet the Chief Minister and the ministers and have a chat with them. So the politicians are available to talk to. Now it's time for you to have your say. I do hope our border control officers are ready for the TT. It's been heard. It's a Manx skeet from Manx Will. It's been heard. There are thousands of immigrants sneaking over on boats with a crash helmet and camping equipment for to stay here. I don't quite know where that's leading, Will. I'm sure you do, but I don't quite understand the relevance of that. The Northern Civic Immunity site, says a Ramsey ratepayer and bride supporter, is run by clowns. The words of this Ramsey ratepayer and bride supporter: perfectly good stuff gets trashed and valuable material gifted to contractors. The place is being mismanaged. Lots of known commercial tipping is permitted at the expense of the ratepayer. Ramsey commissioners know about it. But this is an unacceptable practice. Well, thank you, Ramsey ratepayer and bride supporter. If you've got something definite that you can report, then by all means do get in touch. But we'll take that as skeet for the moment. Certainly the situation is they're going to be £65,000 down in the accounts because bride don't want to take part. Sam's on now. Hi, Sam.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Not bad. What's happening?
Well, I was just listening to your discussion today, and I heard of you that I'm against assisted dying, and the irony is I live across the road from where the hospice used to be. It's a beauty place now. But what I'd like to raise today, please, if I may, is about the treatments for people with essential tremors and Parkinson's and other conditions where they have a shake on board.
Yeah.
It's called multi-focused beam treatment, and on ITVX this year, 2nd or 3rd or 4th of January, there's an article where it said, I think at Liverpool, at the neurology centre in Liverpool, 300 or 400 people had been treated successfully in the non-invasive procedure this year already. It was invented at Imperial College London in about 2016 or 17, 2015 possibly, and I think it was... It was done at Imperial College London, and they did an article on the second or third week of BBC Science and Health's Fergus Walsh reported article then on the BBC News. And basically what they do is it's a non-invasive procedure, so no probes inserted into your mind muscle, your noggin. They don't cut it open or anything, though. No heavy drugs, apart from the anaesthesia and the ultrasound beams. Now, basically, they do scans with the patients. Humans are also patients, it turns out.
Yeah.
And people as well. And they put the patients into a big scanner. There's numerous staff around them. They're observed. And then they do scans with the patients awake and asleep and find out whereabouts they have to aim these intersecting multifocus ultrasound beams. They're less than a millimetre wide. And I think there's 1,024 or 1,048 or 1,068 of these intersecting ultrasound beams.
So are they saying that this is in some way, is this a cure or does it just mitigate Parkinson's?
It's, as far as I can tell, it's a cure. You walk out the same day on the day of the procedure with a bald head but with no shake, and they can do it on both hemispheres of the brain. Quite a bonkers concept, but actually it's what it does is where the intersecting beams meet up is a part of the motor movement part of your bonds, your mind muscle, what's less than a millimeter wide. Do you reckon it's caused by an infection? And then, so where they meet up, it just sort of heats to 40 or 50 degrees, 54 degrees or Celsius, I think.
Yeah.
It kind of anneals the area, and they do test during the procedure to make sure you're not having anything,
good,
any adverse effects when you're awake, and
all
then
right.
Test.
We're out of time now, Sam, but I appreciate that, and thanks for calling today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that's very appropriate, Sam, because, of course, it's World Parkinson's Day today, and if you go to manxradio.com, you'll find an interview with Pamela Shimwell Mayo, who's the chairman and founder of Parkinson's Disease Society Isle of Man. And she said, despite the usual face-to-face work of the charity being paused, support is still available. But if you go to that, it's Parkinson's Awareness Month and World Parkinson's Day today. But I am aware, thank you, Sam, I'm aware that there are all sorts of, there's all sorts of progress being made into Parkinson's, which, of course, is a pernicious condition and grotesque in many ways. It would seem that there's a very distant light at the end of a tunnel whereby it is thought that Parkinson's can be controlled in some way. But have a go. And anyway, if you want, I'm sure Parkinson's Disease Society Isle of Man will be on Facebook somewhere and they'll be able to tell you more about that. Just a quick note.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint
is what you're listening to. And out of hours, the answer phone is open on 682-631. You can email maninline@manxradio.com. Open line all next week. Soon we're going to be out and about. Actually, because I think it's Monday, isn't it? Summer term starts. Good, huh? Everyone goes back to school. We'll be at Castle Russian High School fairly shortly as well. A note in from Ronnie just said, have they still got restrictions at the airport? Yes, some extensions. No extensions beyond 8 o'clock Zulu, that's 9 o'clock, on the 13th of April, which is tomorrow, so watch out for that. And also on the 14th, they've got some breaks from 6, so 7 to 7.35. Thanks to Chris Quirk on the phones today. Have a brilliant weekend.
WINT. 60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
An important decision for a politician or a would-be politician is when to start their career, when to seek election. It's also important to decide when it's time to leave the stage, to retire. What the future held was on the mind of Sir Charles Carouche as he prepared to attend his 50th Tynwald Open Air Ceremony, but also whether to continue in the role that he'd been first to occupy in 1990, president of Tynwald. He was talking to David Collister.
Well, I'm looking forward, actually, to participating in my 50th Tynwald at St John's. Delighted to have the privilege to have been of service to the island over that period.
You did say to us a little while ago that you would leave it until July to make your decision about a political future. What in fact, have you decided?
Well, I've already accepted an invitation to stand for the presidential vacancy when it occurs. So that is your answer.
So that means Sir Charles Carouche seeking re-election as president for a five-year period, and that, of course, is at the end of the agenda for next week's Tynwald.
That's quite correct.
You will, in fact, be going out of office before that, though, won't you?
Yes, the provisions of the Constitution Act are somewhat peculiar, and they really did not take into account the mixed pattern of operation that they were presenting to the court when they were drafting the legislation.
And is that a bit
It's a bit
strange.
Woolly, to be frank.
What about these nominations from the floor? I mean, that's the situation with the re-election of the president. Is that a tidy way of doing it?
Of course, there may be other candidates. I mean, the court is filled by men and women of calibre, quite capable of carrying out the responsibility. And the Act provides that anyone can be nominated from Keys Council or indeed the outgoing president. So it's a very open book.
Part of Ireland life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.